Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the March 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's tip off with one of the most popular annual sporting events here in the USA, the Men's National Collegiate Athletic Association Championship Basketball Tournament. We've reached the Final Four stage in the competition, and three teams have reached the Final Four for the first time. San Diego State University, Florida Atlantic, and the University of Miami. The other team in the Final Four is the University of Connecticut, which is bidding for its fifth national title. The Huskies of Connecticut lifted the trophy in 1999, 2004, 2011, and 2014. In semifinal games to be played Saturday, April 1st in Houston, Texas, Connecticut will play Miami, and San Diego State will face Florida Atlantic. The Aztecs of San Diego State advanced to their first Final Four with a hard-fought one-point victory over Creighton, as we hear now from the AP's Dave Ferry.
Darion Trammell hit a free throw with 1.2 seconds remaining to give San Diego State a 57-56 win over Creighton, putting the Aztecs in the Final Four for the first time.
I shot probably 1,000 free throws in the last week. So at the end of the day, I feel like I put in the work to be able to step up and have the confidence that I was going to make them.
Lamont Butler scored 18 points in helping San Diego State become the first Mountain West team to reach the national semifinals. Ryan Kalkbrenner scored 17 points for the Blue Jays, who were 2 of 17 from three-point range. Baylor Shireman tied the game at 56 by stealing an inbounds pass and converting a layup with 34 seconds left. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. With more on Florida Atlantic advancing to the Final Four, here is the AP's Bruce Morton.
Florida Atlantic is a ninth seed and a team with a ticket to its first Final Four. This after hanging on to win the East region by topping Kansas State 79-76. Owls guard Brian Greenlee says it's great to inhale the tournament's rarefied air.
It's pretty surreal. Just a lot of excitement. Just happiness for the unit that we have, that everyone gets to experience this together, and also a little bit of just hunger to go finish it off.
Meanwhile, Connecticut got to the Final Four. The Huskies made it out of the West, pulling away in the second half to rout Gonzaga 82-54. UConn guard Andre Jackson says a Final Four berth is nice, but not a final destination.
We got a lot to prove. We still got a chip on our shoulder, and we had a goal. And it was to make it to the Final Four, but more importantly, to win a national championship. So that's what we're still pushing towards.
In the women's tournament's Greenville Regional, undefeated South Carolina moved into its third consecutive Elite Eight by downing UCLA 59-43. Guard Breeze Bell said size helped out the defending champs.
We definitely do a lot of work in practice, whether it's ball screen, whether it's, you know, whatever the case may be. So I think for games like this, you know, when offensive scoring is very low, we definitely rely on our defense to keep, you know, their scoring lower than ours.
Next up for the Gamecocks is Maryland, which eliminated Notre Dame 76-59. In the Seattle Regional, Ohio State took over in the second quarter and beat UConn 73-61. The Buckeyes advanced to a matchup with Virginia Tech, which defeated Tennessee 73-64. Bruce Morton.
Sporty greetings. This is Liz Mills, head coach of Abidjan Basketball Club of Cote d'Ivoire. You are listening to Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Coach. Coach Liz Mills and the ABC Fighters advanced to the Men's Basketball Africa League playoffs in May in Kigali, Rwanda. Also booking their tickets to Kigali after recent Sahara Conference play in Dakar, Senegal, are Stade Malien of Mali, AS Douan of Senegal, and Rwanda Energy Group. I discussed the conference action with VOA colleagues Mukbil Yabaro and Action Jackson Vunganyi during our Nothing But Net with Mukbil and Sonny podcast. Let's listen in.
are here on this special VOA podcast of Nothing But Net with Muck, Bill, and Sonny and Jackson. We got the team here with us. Gentlemen, how's it going, man? How are you guys feeling?
Hello.
Hey, I know when Action Jackson is in the studio, the energy level rises.
No pressure,
just
baby.
Like it rises. What's pressure?
Always ready. When I got cold, I'm like, I'm here. Let's do this.
Coach, put me in the game.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
As we were saying, the Sahara Conference has just finished. It was exciting. Honestly,
what a finish.
I can't even call it exciting. Yep. I think it's literally was so unexpected. You have five teams ending with three wins, two losses. Unfortunately, the defending champions, U.S. Monastir, on goal difference, were unable to make it through to the next round. Shocker, gentlemen?
Shocker for sure. I actually had Monastir at the start dominating this conference. I thought they would, if not run away with first place, that they were definitely the team to beat. But four other teams had their say for sure. I think the fact that, you know, we had five teams that finished with the same record, it really speaks to how competitive that conference was.
And that's what I love about this league. And this is what it's showing us, that if you're not sure who's going to win, just the excitement also shows that, you know, other teams are putting in the work, you know. I thought, just like you, Sonny, that Monastir was going to dominate the Sahara Conference, most likely even win the trophy when they get May in Kigali. But, you know, what a big surprise.
You know, Jackson, as you mentioned, man, you know, looking at a team like U.S. Monastir, they were back-to-back finalists, right? So for them to have gone to the finals the first year and lose to Zamalek season one and then beat Petro season two, you're not expecting an early departure.
No,
the gentlemen did not think they were going to Tunisia.
You know, one player we didn't see on Monastir this time around was the big man from Sudan, Majak.
He's
moved on to Petro de Luanda. We'll talk about them a little later.
Absolutely.
In this podcast. But what difference did he make, do you think, not being there in the middle for Monastir?
To me, if I would have to say, I think we'd all agree he was just a rim presence. He was a blocker. It's almost like he just was plugging up the paint. You couldn't get through to him. He's very athletic, long arms. You know, he's a player that, you know, not too many NBA or high-level players play like nowadays, right?
Absolutely.
Very much, you know, defense-oriented, fast, wants to, you know, get the block shots. He gets excited, and he was getting a lot of the crowd excited, too, last two seasons, just simply off of playing defense.
Yeah, I like him. He didn't he color his hair last year, too?
It was blue sometimes. Very Dennis Rodman-like, you know?
No, it was a big loss for Monastir not to have him. He was, like you said, a presence right under the rim right there. Nobody was passing him. And as much as the team was executing on the other side of the court, he was right there each time anybody would come. Not in this house. Not in this house.
The Mutombo wag.
Man.
I love it. I love that wag.
Shout out to Mutombo. How iconic is Mutombo's finger wag, to the point where players like that are so much younger that probably never seen him play still emulate that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bill, I'm betting you never had a shot blocked, though, did you, in your career?
I have here and there. You know, I probably was a lot more excited because it doesn't happen so often. So if I get off the ground and get a block shot, trust me, I will let you know this is not happening again.
I have blocked a few shots in my career. And listen, it comes once in a while, but when it does happen,
it's exciting.
It's exciting. It feels good.
Yeah.
Well, I've been blocked many times.
Maybe on a more serious note, though, we do wish Dikembe Mutombo well. I know he's recovering.
Absolutely.
From brain surgery.
Quick recovery to you, champ.
And, you know, maybe we'll see him later in this season, maybe during the playoffs in
Kigali,
in Rwanda. That'd be great.
That would honestly be so amazing for the entire basketball community. You know, Dikembe Mutombo has been a ambassador for basketball to Africa when there was not that many, when it wasn't the cool thing to do, you know? So for him to champion this and him to be able to be okay after this really big surgery will mean a lot to everybody, honestly.
And getting back to that finger wag of Dikembe,
In fact, the BAL, the Basketball Africa League, has named its Defensive Player of the Year award the Dikembe Mutombo Award right after the
Big Man.
I mean,
who better to
how appropriate.
Yes. Amazing. Amazing. But, gentlemen, let's talk about the four teams that made it through to the finals or championship rounds in Kigali. Stade Malien, AS Douan, Rwanda Energy Group, the home team, and ABC Fighters.
Well, out of those four you mentioned, Mukbil, I think maybe the surprise team is Stade Malien. Making their debut in the Basketball Africa League, I certainly didn't pick them to top the table at the start. And two players in particular for Stade Malien, Diarra and Berthe, I thought they were just phenomenal in Dakar.
I would say ABC, Abidjan Basketball Club, also debutants in this league. And they really did great in the Sahara Conference, playing against some strong teams and beating them. I think it has to do a lot to do with
Coach Mills.
Oh, yeah. And she did a phenomenal job with that team. I was really, really surprised. I expected they were going to lose all the matches. But I mean, I did not think that any, you know, a team will come in and just, you know, shine like that on this level.
Honestly, you know, the interesting thing about it is we were having this conversation offline. Sometimes when you have teams that have been playing in the league for so long, you have film, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, when they say veteran experience is one thing, it is, but then there's also something exciting and interesting about the unknown, and it actually helps you sometimes.
Yes.
Because if you're a debutante team, no one's ever seen how you play. They don't know your play calling. They don't know the style of pace. They don't know what to really expect, but you got a team like U.S. Monastir, and I think I really credit the fact that teams really locked in and studied film.
Yeah, they did.
Watched them and saw what it is that they do well and stopped them from doing what it is that they do well.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's how they were able to get them out, you know? So I think, to me, the debutant teams, honestly, sometimes might have a little bit of an advantage because you don't know. You know how it is. Sometimes you go play at a basketball court that you've never played at before. No one's seen you there before.
Right, right.
Every single move you're doing.
You're surprising.
It's working.
You're surprising everybody.
Everything's working.
I agree with you. On the court where we play with my guys, whenever we have a new kid coming in,
always balls.
But the second time he comes in,
lock
him down.
We have figured you out. We know your side of we know where you're
what
going. Your right hand, your left arm is not quite as strong as your right, so we know how to block you.
Jackson,
you know,
and the crew did some film writing.
We take some notes. We watch you.
We'll make sure this doesn't happen again. But yeah, no.
Well, getting back to Monastir, they finished fifth, and so they were out in terms of advancing. However, I got to cut them a little slack. Mm-hmm. They played back-to-back games, their final two games in Dakar, as did ABC Fighters. Mm-hmm. And both teams lost that second game by big margins. So I have to wonder, did they tire in that second game?
They're also not very young, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have, I think, one of the older teams in the league.
Right.
It's possible that they were tired, but it's also possible, that like you said, they have been studied. There's so much tape.
You have two seasons worth of tape on Monastir.
Absolutely,
man.
Absolutely. You know? But honestly, that was for me a really big surprise that they were not able to make it.
Right.
And they didn't make it because of goal difference, I believe.
Yes, absolutely.
Complex for me to understand.
Right.
Mukbil had to explain to me a little bit.
So because during their games, you know, the goal differential was just during your wins, how much did you win by, subtracted by how much did you lose by on your losses. So honestly speaking, a lot of the teams were relatively close. To have five teams all 3-2, and then everything comes down to goal differential. You can't get more. How is the Nile Conference gonna outdo the Sahara Conference?
Absolutely.
That's my question. But before we jump there, let's talk about some of these players. Sonny just mentioned, you know, Aliou Diarra, who to me has been the most impressive player in the conference so far.
I would agree. I think he was MVP of the Sahara Conference.
For sure. You know, young man, 21 years old. He's a big, you know, long arms, very athletic.
Fluid.
Oh, my goodness. And then it's like he plays on both ends. He has a teammate that scores just as much as he does, but isn't really necessarily as impactful as he is on a defensive end, which is Solomon Berthe, a stud as well. But he's more of the offensive juggernaut as opposed to his defensive prowess, right?
Can we also talk about Bile, though? Bile, I mean,
Bile. That's a great name. I actually kind of forgot about that name.
Shudia Bile. I mean, he was able really to come through for the team when Haruna was not able to.
Haruna was having a very tough shooting night, you know? He honestly had two tough shooting back-to-backs, actually, because in his last game, he also was struggling as well. So hopefully we hope to see Haruna get back to his form, because we know he's a stellar mid-range kind of guy, and he's been playing well up until those last two games. But it could also be what Sonny and Jackson have been saying: fatigue, man. Some of these back-to-backs on the older players. Haruna is not the youngest player.
although Mukbil, I must say, you know, NBA teams play back-to-back all the time.
Absolutely.
And we're talking, what are we talking, six games here?
Oh yeah.
So I mean, you have to be ready to come out and that's go hard for all six.
But we got to think about NBA, and nowadays we have load management as well, right? So we have players that might not be able to go and say, "Hey, coach, I don't want to do this back-to-back.
Can you have somebody else in there?
I might need this for the playoffs. You might have to hold me out, coach."
Getting back to Bile, and I like him. What a rugged player.
Oh.
But one local note, shout out for the DMV.
Oh, yeah.
Bile played his college basketball right here in Washington for the Georgetown Hoyas.
Hoyas.
And I'm thinking maybe that rugged style of his he got from Patrick Ewing.
Oh, it's definitely very possible, because you know how it is in the city.
Coach Ewing, who just departed the Hoyas after, what, almost 8 years at the helm. I mean, I'm sure you're right, Sonny. He probably, you know, gave him some of that, you know, the metal that he needs.
If we just look at the history of Georgetown basketball with the Thompsons as well, so it's like the style of play has always been round and pound.
Yes,
very physical,
I like that.
Yeah. Very physical. You got a guy, just think about if we go as far back as Allen Iverson, he has a small guard, but look how physical he was. He never shied away from getting hit. Yes. He was almost always on the floor.
He was always in your fist.
Right? Always.
And he was a football player in high school.
He was.
And he was a good football player.
All-state, you know, all-state. But I know if he would have played football, his career wouldn't have been that long.
Absolutely. But again, we should say, without Chodye Bile in the last two games, I don't think ABC would have been able to make it.
Oh, yeah. No, but that also, you know, let's attribute that to coaching, right, as well. During that time, I believe it was the game where Coach Liz Mills was out. Assistant Coach Eric Pinot was in there, I believe, and he honestly made the right call by, you know, making sure, hey, Haruna, let's sit down for a little bit.
It's not a good day for you today.
Let's just have a seat. Yeah. Let's just relax, you know, because you could see Haruna was getting frustrated. Yeah. The jumper wasn't going down. So what did he do? He just told him, listen, just wait it out.
Yeah.
You got it. You got teammates. This is a team game.
It's a team game.
Your team will uplift
you.
And honestly, that was one of my favorite games, because Kawara Falcons really put it all on the line.
Yep.
We're up maybe
seven points, and they kept going back and forth.
Playing for pride.
Yeah.
Playing for pride.
Yeah, but honestly speaking, even though they finished the conference without a single win, the gentlemen should hold their heads up high. They all came out to play. There were some stellar performances
100%.
In there.
And they were all competitive in all the games.
Yeah, there was no real blowouts for the Falcons. So it was just, you know, not having maybe that player that could just put them over the hump. Maybe, you know, next time they'll just need that key player, that gel guy.
That's Mukbil Yabberow. Mukbil and Action Jackson Vunganyi join me for our special Voice of America podcast, Nothing But Net, with Mukbil and Sonny, covering Season 3 of the Men's Basketball Africa League, or BAL.
Voice of America!
The Voice of America is a proud broadcasting partner of the BAL.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
In African athletics, Ghanaian sprinter Isaac Botio has been running some fast times recently for the track and field team at West Texas A&M University here in the USA. In this Sunny Side of Sports profile, Yawafusu Larbi tells us more about the 23-year-old athlete. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Isaac Botio grew up in 2nd D in Ghana's western region. His life as a boy is a far cry from where he is now. At the West Texas A&M University, there's a functioning running track, equipment, and other perfectly curated schedules to help his athletic development. All of which he did not readily have when he decided to take up athletics in Ghana. Botio, like every young Ghanaian child, loved football. He played in his neighborhood with his friends and had aspirations of taking it up until he found athletics in high school. At the University of Ghana, he was at his peak.
I ran a couple of meets over there. And I was able to join the University of Ghana athletics team to Kenya. So I was ranked the third fastest man in all African university at 2022 All African University Games at Kenyatta University, and also I won the Junior Olympics, which was organized by the Ghana Creative Athletics Club. I won that race. That was in 2021. Yeah.
The move from Ghana to the United States is always a tough one. He struggled initially, but has integrated quickly.
At first, you know, it will not be easy for anybody in your first position here in terms of academics. You know, so sports like training, combining your education and athletics, because in US, it's all about education, your education first. Your education first. So it wasn't easy for me because I was using the Ghana method of education, like education system here. But as time goes on, I was able to catch up with everything and also get focused on my athletics training and also education as well.
The last few weeks have been phenomenal for the young athlete. He has just won the D2 National Indoor 60-meter dash, recording a personal best of 6.69 seconds, and is basking in it.
The feeling is great. You know, it's all about focus, dedication, discipline, hard work. You know, since day one, I've been winning my conference, I've been winning my my heat. So the target was me getting the national title. So it's all about, yeah, we focusing and training to get a national title. Yeah, the feeling was amazing.
Now, just take me through the race. I mean, how did it go for you? And after the race, when you saw your time, and then when you saw that you had won, how, you know, just take me through the emotions that you went through after the race.
I had a couple of runs, blocks with my coach. You know, most of the coach I ran, like, they were surprised. Like, in a few minutes, I'm going to run the 60, and all of a sudden, I'm doing the straight speed of, let's say, max V of 80% during the practice. You know, I did a couple of blocks over there. They were like, most of the coaches were surprised, but I believe in Coach Alom, like what he was doing and the method that he was giving me, because I'm, as I said earlier on, I'm a type of athlete. When I get only one race, I need to heat up a lot. Like, I need to get a lot of warm-up before I can execute in the race. So I think that was the magic.
Botio has won one time, but that is what winning does. It makes you want more. He has set his sights on winning a lot more, running at top meets in the world and big events like the Olympics and the World Championships.
Now that the indoor season has ended, we are still in the lab working hard with my coaches, we are still working hard in the lab, back to be like back to where we left when we went to the nationals, the indoor nationals. So I think this Saturday we'll be having an outdoor meet. So we are now focusing on the outdoor, because what we were doing was specifically based on indoors. So now we'll be moving on our outdoor basis. So the focus is to join the national team and also to qualify for Budapest as the world championship, and also to make it to the Olympics. It's just a matter of time. That's my anthem. Like, I believe in time and I believe in consistency. So as time goes on, they should expect something good from me.
Anytime you remember Ghana and athletics, there will be a few names that will come up. Benjamin Asamati, Joseph Paul Amoa, who won bronze at the Commonwealth Games last year. But always remember the young kid coming through, Isaac Botio. For the sunny side of sports, this is the Alpha Sulabi in Accra.
Thanks, Yao. Samson Omale joins us now with a package of African sports news.
South Africa completed the highest successful chase in T20 cricket of 259 as they beat West Indies by 6 wickets in a record-breaking run fest at Centurion. Quinton de Kock smashed a 15-ball 50 and a 43-ball 100 as South Africa topped West Indies 258-5 with 7 balls to spare, making 259-4 in 18.5 overs. The match is the highest scoring in the history of T20 cricket, with 517 runs amassed across the course of a remarkable encounter at the SuperSport Park. Quinton de Kock was named the man of the match for his century.
Well, it's quite special. I think I've been searching for it for a while. Obviously, we don't play much T20 cricket internationally here at Centurion, and when we do, I seem to be given off that game. So to come and do it here at the home ground was quite special. He was quite the silent assassin, just doing what Reza does. He helped me quite a long, which was nice. And he said to him when he got out, I said, geez, we did something really special out there, and we're both proud of what you've done.
And out to athletics, where Kenyan Hilary Kipkoech won the Madrid Half Marathon on Sunday. Kipkoech crossed the finish line in a time of 59 minutes, 56 seconds in the World Athletics River Road Race Series. Ethiopia's Tekile Bikila finished second in 1 hour 49 seconds, while Ashagri Tisema completed the podium with a personal best of 1 hour 56 seconds. Zwiditu Andrua of Ethiopia took home the women's title with a time of 1 hour 7 minutes 38 seconds. Alimetu Tariku, also of Ethiopia, finished second with a personal best time of 1 hour 7 minutes 49 seconds. Ayinadis Shehome earned bronze with a time of 1 hour 9 minutes 02 seconds. In boxing news, Pearl Dlamini, the first African woman to serve on the board of the International Boxing Association, is advocating for the increase in prize money for female boxers. Dlamini, who has been president of the Swaziland Boxing Association for the last 9 years, says increase in prize money for women boxers will translate to huge benefits for the women and their families, especially in Africa.
If you look at the case of a lady from Mozambique, whose story was shared to all of us today, she has been able to sort of like build her family from the funds that she gets from the prize money. So IPA somehow is improving lives and touching lives directly. Because some of these women boxers here, they are actually not benefiting alone, but their entire families are benefiting from the process of this prize money. So please, prize money everywhere, even in the local federation championship.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Wraps up the March 27th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington.
I get it.
And that's the sunny side of sports.